Shrink Wrap Radio number 650, What Wolves Can Teach Us, with Teo Alfaro.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Teo Alfaro, TEDx presenter, shamanic practitioner, and author of the 2019 book, The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human. For more information about Teo Alfaro, please see our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. Now, here's the interview. Teo Alfaro, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David. It's good to be here.
Well, it feels really great for me to have this connection with you and see you because I enjoyed your TEDx presentation so much, and I'm so impressed by your book, The Wolf Connection. I'll let my audience, this will be on video as well as audio, so they get a sense of what the book looks like. Beautiful cover, unfortunately, says not for sale, review copy. I'll share it with some of my family, though. I don't think they'll be offended by that.
No.
And you know, I think the book and the whole thing that you're doing with wolves really touches. Clearly, it has touched people and drawn people to you. And I think, particularly at this time that we're really hungry for nature. And that this, at the very least, gives the reader a vicarious experience of the wild. And also, nature, transcendence. We're looking for transcendent experiences. And that's very much a focus of this book as well. So let's jump into it. I should say that the title of the book is The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human, which is a very interesting spin on it. So first of all, let me ask you, how did your journey with wolves begin?
My journey with wolves began by fate, by coincidence. It's not something that I ever had in the forefront of my vision or imagination or life journey.
I'm a big believer in fate and synchronicity, by the way. So you're on solid ground with me.
You know, many people try to, you know, they work on their vision, and I think they buy the illusion that we need to know every detail of what our life is going to look like in the future in order to be successful, in order to be happy. And truth is, in my journey, I planted a few seeds that were critical in terms of who I am in the world.
Yeah.
So early in my life, I pledged my life to raising consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And that's what led to all the work in Carlos Castaneda and my teachings and so on. So that's really what I'm here to do. And second, years later, I pledged my life to raise consciousness and be of service to the next generation.
Uh-huh.
How consciousness is raised? Well, in every act, every breath I take, every beat of my heart, consciousness is raised everywhere I go. On a good day, I can be an advocate and a conduit to raising consciousness. How I was going to serve the next generation? I didn't know.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the concepts in the tradition that I'm part of in this ancient Mexican shamanistic tradition that was transmitted by Carlos Castaneda in his writings, one of the concepts is finding your path with heart.
Yes, I remember that phrase from reading. The teachings
so
of Don Juan.
My meeting with the wolves and my service to the next generation is that path with heart for me. So it's a venue, it's an outlet in which I can pour my 20 years of training in this tradition, the lessons that I've learned, the practices that I carry, into an environment that really makes a difference in everyday people.
Okay. So tell us about the first wolf meeting.
Everything started with a little wolf dog puppy named Tala that I reluctantly adopted. She needed help. She was coming from a backyard breeder in the suburbs here of Los Angeles. And I was a busy man. I didn't want to have a pet, all those things. Right. And this little pup did not take no for an answer. And you know, obviously she never said a word, but energetically speaking, she came coming back to me and I could not reject it. Eventually, I took her in. And I remember the first day that I locked her up and she was 6 weeks old. I put her in the kitchen. So I didn't want her to pee and poop around the house. She was not potty trained that young. And around 1 a.m, she began howling in the kitchen, right? And so that howl echoed through the house and right into my heart, you know, cracked me open. And the rest is history, as they say, you know, looking for a playmate for her. I find another 16 wolves and wolf dogs from a holding situation. And I began volunteering. And next thing I know, I'm adopting all 16 animals, knowing that I would care for them for the rest of their lives.
Wow. At that point, looking for a playmate, you end up with 16 wolves and wolf dogs.
Yeah.
And I assume a wolf dog is a hybrid that's – what, half dog or maybe less?
Yeah, has some percentage of dog content.
So just before we move on, is there a noticeable difference between wolf dogs and wolves?
Well, the wolf dog is a whole spectrum, right? Okay. You know, a wolf is a wolf. It's a wild, you know, the way nature intended it. A dog is the way humans intended it and after tens of thousands of years of inbreeding. And then you have the whole spectrum in between. You have wolf dogs that look pretty much exactly like a wolf, and they have wolf dogs that have a little bit of wolf that are mostly dog, and they can, you know, they wag their tail and they come and ask you to rub their bellies and all that. So it's a big spectrum, and in that spectrum they can be more doggy looking, doggy acting. Wolf looking, wolfy acting. Someone may look a little more doggy, but acts like a wolf. One looks more wolfy, but acts like a dog. So the whole spectrum of behavior, really interesting. In a way, the perfect mirror for us human. Every single one of us, we are a hybrid or a mutt among many races and generations and cultures. And we have a little bit of European, a little bit of African, a little bit of, you know, our genes, we carry all of it. So the wolf dog is really a great mirror for that.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, in the book, let's get into the book a bit. In your book, you've organized it into what you call the realms of the wolf.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by the use of the word realm. Don't hear that word a lot. I think of it in terms of royalty. You know, of a king in his realm or a queen in her realm. How did the word realm come to you? How did that appear as an appropriate?
Yeah, like many others, I watched Game of Thrones. So, you know, the king of the realm or the seven realms. I'm referred to the word realm more in the shamanistic or esoteric use of the word. So you can talk about the spirit realm and the animal realm and the plant and the different realms in the sense of layers of consciousness and layers of understanding and psychological and psychic connection that superimpose each other, that overlay with each other. They don't touch each other, but you can connect, you can draw a cross section among them and have an interaction with the different realms.
Okay, good. Maybe nobody else has thrown that question at you. I'm not sure.
No, it's not the first time. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So realm one you describe as the wolf heart awakens. That's a very evocative phrase. Tell us about that.
Well, I, um, The number nine is a very meaningful number in my life for a number of reasons, the way my stars are aligned and so on. So, and I wanted to establish the realms as different, ways to see the wolf. I mean, most of us, you know, we hear the word wolf and we think about the animal that hunts deer and lives in the wild, which is true. And not in the way I see it is not the only way to refer or relate to a wolf. And the reason I set up the first realm as the realm of the human heart and the awakening of that heart is because without, I know I equate the wolf heart with the wild heart, with the awakened heart, with the open heart, with the loving heart, creative heart, inclusive heart, belonging heart, nature heart. I mean, so wolf heart means, you know, a healthy, alive, joyful, a bold, daring heart. Uh-huh. And, I put it first because without that, there's no game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, as long as we remain closed and fearful and we don't meet life in its full splendor, there's no game. There's nothing else that we can talk about that will really make a difference.
Yeah. And your experience with wolves is that there's something about them, I gather, that tends to speak to the human heart.
Well, I mean, we'll talk more about this in the realm six, but, you know, in some of the downloads and more cosmic downloads that I've received directly from the wolf, what they explained to me is that the cosmic meaning of the word wolf is heart. Mm. And when you meet a wolf, I mean, the heart energy is palpable. So and the wolf is, you know, it's an animal that has been, has co-evolved and coexisted with humans in a way that no other animal has. So this ancestral connection with the wolf, with the ancestral heart connection with the wolf is what I think can be a way for us to return to something that you mentioned earlier, which is our longing for connection with the natural world.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Which, by the way, the big fog around that and the big illusion is that the natural world is outside of us and we need to connect with it. That uh-huh. longing to connect with the natural world is that really a longing to connect with ourselves. I mean, that we are nature. We are a mammal. We breed and we interact, you know, we eat nature. We are nature ourselves. It's just that in our modern world, we have, deluded ourselves into thinking that nature is something we need to immerse ourselves in. It's out there. It's not here.
Yeah, thank you for that reminder. That's a good reminder. By the way, your book is loaded with stories, and so I want you to feel free to throw in any stories of as they come to you, if they make sense anywhere in the conversation. Stories about people that you've worked with and how people have been touched by their experiences with wolves, as well as your own experiences. So let's move on to, and I understand already that it's the realms all cross cut each other, as you say, and so it's hard to talk about one in isolation because they all mutually affect one another.
Yeah, and each of them could be a book, you know. So in a way, what I did is I wrote nine short books within a larger book because the realms really are very different from each other. And so the first one is about the human heart awakening. And then I go into the second realm, directly into the work done at the ranch, you know, between realm two. So the ambassador wolf is direct stories and experiences. So once that heart is awakened, then what happens when a human and a wolf meet and what kind of healing is possible and what kind of transformation is possible? So, you know, in the book, I tell the story of this young woman, Nina, that we met at a residential treatment facility, dual diagnosis. She had, she was battling drug use, and also she had a mental health diagnosis. And, So she had phobias and she couldn't leave the building, and she had this, hopping from tile to tile. She couldn't step on cracks between tiles, you know, those kind of phobias or cracking leaves in nature or getting dirty. So they already, when we came to the residential treatment facility, they told us, well, this woman is not going to come out. And I said, well, let me go into the house with the smallest wolf. We still have her. Her name is Aya. She's a wolf coyote mix. So we brought her in. She's very welcoming, sweet animal. And this woman, Nina, really connected with her. And so with just a couple of minutes with Ayasha in the house, she decided to come out. So that alone was a huge, huge step for her. When she came out, she met the other way. I have four or five wolves that day with us. And there was one in particular, Miko, a very large pure wolf that we had. And they connected. And after a short presentation where this woman is tensing and releasing and tensing and releasing. I mean, you have a background in psychology. You know how those phobias really can take hold on people and so on. Then say, well, let's go for a hike. This was in the mountains in the Malibu area. So let's go for a little hike, just nearby the residential facility. And she said, well, I'll come. So all of a sudden we have this woman that 20 minutes earlier, you couldn't step out of the house. Now she's hitting the trail next to Nico. So, and we hiked a couple of miles into the forest with leaves and branches and dirt and wind and smells and pollen and insects and all of it. And she's marching right next to the wolves. I mean, no one could believe their eyes. Wow. And we get to a rest stop where we get a sip of water. And then Nina kneels down to offer her hand and connect with Miko. And Miko jumps at her, slobbers her to a point that Nina falls back on the dirt with the wolf on top of her. And they're rolling and playing, and she's crying and laughing and crying and laughing. I mean, all this release is taking place.
Oh, my goodness.
And all she, I mean, I didn't put this on the book, but all she could say is like, wait until Dr. Goldman hears about her psychiatrist, right? I mean, wait until I can tell my psychiatrist what's going on here. I mean, that was the only thing she could think about. And because of that, single interaction with the wolf, with Miko, Nina was released from the residential treatment facility 2 months sooner. She applied for a therapy dog, and with the help of the dog, was able to resume her life, go back to college. She had a relationship. She got a part-time job. I mean, in a sweep of a wand, and a magic wand, this wolf was able to heal this woman to a great extent. So in a way that she could go back to her life.
That's such a great and inspiring story, and probably should give listeners, viewers, a little bit of background. You have a ranch outside of L.A. where it's really become kind of a therapy wolf ranch, where you've got a pack of wolves and wolf dogs, and you use them as healing animals, and you do a lot of work with young people, troubled young people. And it looks like you also make house calls because you took five to that.
less and less. We used to visit a lot of residential treatment facilities. I found that the work is a lot more powerful at the ranch. Instead of moving the wolves to an unknown location that they need to explore and become acquainted with in their own home, they're a lot more comfortable and they're able to really take the therapy a lot deeper. So I still do some house calls with the pack, but less and less. We have a couple of hundred acres, about an hour north of LA in the San Gabriel Mountains at 4,000 feet of elevation. So even though we are sort of LA, we have snow in the winter and we have, four seasons. And currently we have 33 or 35 wolves on our pack. We just received a couple of new ones. These wolves are not coming from the wild. They are wolves that people buy as illegal pets, and then they abandon, mistreat, or they get confiscated by authorities. Or we have a handful of wolves now from fur farms to different locations across the country where wolves are being raised for the pelt. So those facilities sometimes are getting shut down by authorities or different reasons. And we are able to retrieve those animals. because in most cases, when wolves and wolf dogs are confiscated by government agencies, they're most of the time put to sleep because they're not adoptable. It's a wild animal. You can't send it anywhere. And there are only a handful of sanctuaries across the country that are mostly maxed out.
Yeah.
Which is our case as well. So now we're trying to develop more enclosures to rescue more animals.
Wow.
What makes Wolf Connection unique is that once they come to us, we rehabilitate them mentally, physically, psychologically, emotionally, and they become ambassadors in the human world. I mean, ambassador for the wolf message in a world of humans that really need to hear the message.
Yeah, great. That's wonderful background. The next realm is called the ancestral wolf.
Right.
What are you getting at there?
Well, what I mean, once the heart opens and once you witness the magic that happens when a wolf and a human meet, then I go to why is that? And the reason is, science is beginning now to confirm or suggest what indigenous cultures have been talking about for millennia, which is the wolf is the first animal we ever associated with. The wolf is the teacher. The wolf has taught us how to hunt, how to live in peace, how to migrate, how to communicate, our moral codes, how to associate and organize socially in small villages and extended families. The scientists now say we have adopted a wolf lifestyle about 30 or 40,000 years ago. We stopped behaving primates, and we began behaving like wolves, literally. So
because the wolves operate in a pack, and so they work cooperatively together.
Right. I mean, some primates also live in groups, but the cooperation and the sharing of risk and the sharing of reward and the extended family model. I mean, most primates have this parent-offspring relationship, but it's usually competitive with other offsprings and with other families. Wolves have more of a communal way of living. So the pups are being raised not only by the parents, by the aunts and uncles, older siblings, non-relative wolves that come and are part of the pack. Everybody contributes. And that's a very unique. I mean, whales and elephants also do that, but it's only very few species live like that. And the wolves, because of our history of coevolution, is the one that most likely has taught us that.
Mm-hmm.
So on the ancestral wolf realm, the realm three, I talk about basically I present the research, latest research on that through genome mapping and recent archaeological discoveries.
Yeah, I love the depth of your book and the way that you've gone off in many directions of researching the significance of the wolf, symbolically, genomically, scientifically, so that's a wonderful quality for anybody who wants to learn about the wolf. It's much broader than just, it's a nice pet to have, except it's not a nice pet to have, but you know what I mean.
That was my goal, David. That was to present a complete picture.
Yeah,
there are books written on mythology that most of them cover Native American mythology. I wanted to also cover Eastern mythology. There are wolf legends in Tibet and China and Japan and the Middle East. There are wolves, Russia. Africa, Northern Africa. I mean, the wolf at one point inhabited the entire Northern Hemisphere, and it was the top predator even in times where there were, saber-toothed cats and stuff like that. The wolf still was a predator higher in the pecking order just because of the masses. So, they were running in big groups. So,
by cooperating, cooperating in the hunt, so that it wasn't like one wolf bringing down an animal, but a lot of wolves
right.
cooperatively working to achieve a goal.
Yeah.
This is my opportunity to ask a question that I'm dying to ask, which is, we've all heard stories of feral children who have been raised by a wolf. Is that truth or fiction? Have you been able to figure that out?
There's no scientific evidence of that. I mean, I don't think there has been studies that actually have focused on trying to find that out. So any stories that we know about wolves that have been or humans that have been raised by wolves are mythological, are tales. That said, you find that story that very common. It's a very common story in most traditions. Native Americans have it. First Nations have it. The Celtic tradition and the First Nations of Europe. The founders of Rome were breastfed by a she-wolf.
Remus and Romulus.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Somehow I remember that.
yeah. So I would imagine that I wouldn't put it past the veracity of it, and then it became legend. I can't prove nor deny.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, let's move on to the Wild Wolf, Realm 4.
So in that realm, that was pretty straightforward. I aim to present the latest on wild wolf behavior. So there are books coming out on wild wolf observations and behavior mostly every year. So the last one was early 18 and 2017. So I actually went back and talked to those researchers and asked them, what did you find out in the last 2 years since you published? So they were gracious enough to share their findings. I include them here. I did a couple of trips to Yellowstone National Park. I went to in the field with some of the biologists. I sat with the director of, Doug Smith, the director of the National Park Service, the director of the Wolf Project. So I aim to basically update the latest findings on wolf behavior in the wild. And it has a couple of stories of my own impressions and my own reflections as I'm standing there knee deep in snow with, spotting scopes, observing, mating rituals and hunting and different things that we were lucky enough to catch.
What did you learn when you were doing that kind of research? Did you learn anything that surprised you that you didn't already know?
Well, there was one thing that actually surprised me. Wolves are wolves are wolves. That's what I learned. What I mean by that is we witness in the wild a lot of behaviors, interactions, the way they're certain personalities that we see also at the ranch with captive wolves that have never been in the wild. And their ancestors have not been in the wild for a few generations. They come from breeding facilities and they still carry very similar body language and traits and interactions. And the one that is more dominant and the one that is submissive, how the youngins. So I was there with my wife watching the wolves in the wild and we were, oh, look at that one. That one behaves like Miko and that one behaves like, Shade and that one behaves like Kenai, right? So finding the similarities there, that was very surprising because many times I feel I have to separate in my descriptions. Well, this is how wolves behave in the wild. This is how they behave in captivity. There are certain traits that are different in one and another. So, so finding the bridge in behavior was very comforting for me.
Yeah, great. Realm 5 is called the human wolf.
That realm is probably a challenging one for many readers. I mean, what I aimed to argue there was that the wolf is our mirror. What we see in the wolves is what we have in our soul, what we have in our hearts. So some people will see, and the wolf will reflect the good, the bad, and the ugly. Right? Some people will see this beautiful animal, a family animal that would, with loyalty and love for their pack and would do anything to protect their pack and would, and would keep the nature in balance. Some other people see devil worshiping monster that will come and eat your children. You know, in some states in this country, you will see some billboards on the side of the road where wolves are portrayed eating kids, right? And there are states that are heavy in trying to eradicate wolf completely, and you know, I make an argument in that chapter that the problem or the issues between wolves and humans across the country. I mean, the wolf has become a political issue, right next to abortion and healthcare. And I mean, every other month you hear Congress, what Congress is doing with wolves, and you never hear, you know, Congress going after bears or mountain lions or deer or anything else. It's always the wolf delisting or the wolf listing. I mean, it's such a energetically and culturally and historically, evolutionary speaking, such a close relation that we have that brings up the best of us, the best out of us, and brings up the worst out of us. You know, so
are wolves loved
so fully or hated passionately? And so between wolves and humans is really a problem between humans and humans. The conflict between wolves and humans is a conflict between human and human, not really wolves. The wolf is just the mirror to reflect our dysfunction.
Yeah. Now, is it ranchers who spearhead the interest in getting rid of wolves?
Look, I mean, it's easy to really stereotype and generalize and say ranchers or city people do one want, or you know, progressive Democrats want this and conservatives want that. It's not so much so. It's more like across all those sections, there are people that have had direct interaction with wolves in the wild, and they've seen that they are not that bad, that they are not that dangerous, they are just another animal that trying to thrive and take care of all their young and their pack, excuse me. And then we have the people that never had an interaction with a wolf and come up with these horror stories in their heads. Yeah. And then they act upon those stories as if they knew what they're talking about. And of course, Hollywood have not helped, you know, with all this bloodthirsty wolf movie that they put out. The Brothers Grimm have not helped with Little Red Riding Hood, The Three Little Pigs, and all the stories that we grew up with, and one way or another plant unconscious, you know, beliefs and filters in our heads. And all this started really in the time of the Inquisition and the witch hunts. Before that, the wolf and the human was not in such a contradictory life, but after that it became really an issue.
Huh, interesting. Well, the next realm is the cosmic wolf.
Well, this one I completely switch gears.
Yeah.
Because the cosmic wolf is, I allow myself to present a little bit more of my shamanic training and shamanic experiences. Just like all of us, we have a direct connection with the natural world, a direct connection with other life forms. Some of us never pay attention to that, so we think we don't have it. But it only takes a moment, like you said earlier, just walk into a forest and you can feel the trees, you can feel the river, you can feel, right? So if people can have these feelings after 10 or 15 minutes in nature, imagine if you actually focus on those connections and develop them.
Yeah.
That's available to every single one of them. I'm not special in this in any way, except that I've taken the time to develop some of these connections with other life forms. So in the realm six, what I describe a wolf message or wolf download that I received in state of lucid dreaming or dreaming attention. We have the normal dreams, which are a mix of what happened to you in the day, some thoughts, emotions, what you ate for dinner, blah, 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 right? I mean, you know, it's a just mix of things that jump around. And then there are ways to hone that dreaming attention so you can actually receive messages, gain knowledge, communicate. But it's really another realm of experience. So in that state of more lucid, more awakened dreaming, I came in contact with a presence that called itself Wolf, which is a collective consciousness of all the wolves that ever existed and will ever exist. It's just an entity that, according to them, they have been assisting humanity since the beginning of time and helping us and teaching us and guiding us through our sustainable existence. So I'm in that chapter, I'm describing the message the way I received it and I understood it. The purpose of our ego, how we created our self-reflection and what went wrong in that. I mean, all that is described in that chapter. And I'm planning to expand on that in a future book called The Power of the Wolf Dream. That's for a later interview.
Yeah, wonderful. I'll look forward to that. And so that's the cosmic wolf. Then you've got in Realm 7, the mythological wolf.
Well, after I had that experience, that download, that wolf message, my question was, who else? I mean, the wolf said, you have other people, there are other sisters and brothers that you have across the planet that have received the same message. Uh-huh. So I got curious. I mean, who else have received this message? And then, so I did some research now in the area of mythology around the planet, and I found that I wasn't the only or the first one to receive a message like this. Indigenous cultures around the planet have received similar messages, and they interpret it in their own cultural ways. So there are all kinds of wolf creation mythology, wolf teachings that have accompanied all cultures on the Northern Hemisphere throughout history. So I wanted to expand and connect the experience that I have with traditions around the world.
Yeah, fantastic. you've got a Realm 8, which is the ritualistic wolf.
In that one, what I did is if you see the progression, I received the message. I go to find out who else this received it. And then in 8, I ask, what did they do with this message?
Yeah, right.
And what they do is they created ways of living, ways of being that will reflect their message and mythology. And they created it in a form of rituals of initiation, cultural ways, moral codes that were informed by the wolf message. So the same way that I took the wolf message and I put it into practice, a wolf connection, indigenous cultures took the wolf message and put it into practice in their way of living.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I was aiming to reflect that. And then on Realm 9, what I do is just say, well, okay, so now that we know all this, what can you, the reader, do to apply some of these lessons in your own life? So what I provide in Chapter 9 is a basic, just a startup wolf practice, so people can bring that awareness of the wolf into the daily life. So I provide, the 12 wolf lessons or wolf principles that people can use, once a week, once a month, but keep that awareness building in the back of their minds, because this is about critical mass. If we pay attention to one thing long enough and frequently enough, then it starts building within ourselves. And next thing you know, then your life improves. You have better relations. You have better reactions. Your emotional processing matures.
Yeah. So I know there's this history of the totem animal, and which is the animal that would be feel some magical connection to, right? Yeah. And so the wolf emerges as a very strong source of enacting that idea.
Yeah.
You mentioned the 12 wolf principles. Maybe you can take us through those.
Sure. So the wolf principles, like I said, are very simple lessons from wolves to humans that I wrote keeping the psychology and the emotional state of the people that I try to help in mind. So what I mean by that is, at Wolf Connection, we focus on youth in foster care, young people, teens and young adults that have been physically, mentally, emotionally mistreated, they come very close down, psychologically impaired many times. They just can't take it anymore, right? So I didn't want to develop complicated concepts. I wanted to have like one sentence lesson, instructions that they could connect with. And then through the experience with the wolf, receive an experience of that lesson. So, so the first one is the wolves are okay with who they are, right? Super simple lesson. And at the same time, probably takes a lifetime for any of us to truly, truly be okay with who we are. And what I mean by that, the distinction I want to make is being okay with who you are doesn't mean you like who you are or you like the stage of your life you're in. That means that you're observing and being okay with what is. Mm-hmm. What is the benefit of that? If we go into the psychology of most humans, I have a reality. Let's say I lost my job, or I'm having issues with my wife or partner. I have certain challenge. That's the reality. That's the observable fact. And then in our head, we start making, jumping to conclusions. So we say, well, I lost my job because I'm worthless, because I'm no good, because I'm a loser, and I deserve to die. Right? And we go into those downward spirals of self-criticism that really create the bulk of the suffering. Because really, I lost my job. Well, I'll go find another one.
Yeah.
Right? But I lost my job. I'm a loser. I deserve it. All these things. And then I'm going to jump off a bridge. It's a big jump. So being okay with who you are is say, well, okay, I lost my job. Okay. I lost my job. I'm going to just observe and be with that. And that bypasses or eradicates or pushes aside all those layers of self-deprecating judgment. So, and this is a source of great healing for the youth that we help, because many of them think that they were abused because something they did. Mm-hmm. Or they were they were abandoned. Their parents abandoned them because they were bad kids, or because they deserved it. They are worthless. They are not good. I mean, so it's really heavy, right?
Yeah.
And so, by taking all those judgments away, all of a sudden they say, "Well, this is just my reality. I was abandoned. Okay, not something I wish to anybody, but okay." Let's just move forward. You know, and it's the way, except for humans, nature operates this way. Right? Yeah. So then we have a realm two. And then, of course, I'm going to just run you through them quickly. Each of the realms in the book has a deeper explanation. And then it has something called the howl to action. So it's a little action that people can take to, put that into practice, a little meditation or a little walk in the park or an interaction with their pet if they have one, or go down to the dog park and sit with animals or to an animal reserve to really observe and incorporate some of that wisdom.
What do we know about the wolf howl scientifically in the wild, etc.? Do we know why wolves howl?
Yeah, we have the scientific, and then we have the, there's a traditional, indigenous interpretation of the howl. And then it's an energetic. The science, we know that they have 32 sounds. So a very, very rich vocalization, that many tones of howling, plus grunts and whines and growls and barks. And so very broad communication that is also, enriched by a very rich body language. So in addition to all these sounds, they have ear movement and eyebrows and mouth. I mean, they kind of smile and get excited. I mean, you can tell eye movements. You can tell all kinds of things by looking at a dog or a wolf, which is very rare in nature. In general, it's not the same if you look at at a cow or a lizard or a bear most animals, they don't have the range of fish. They don't have any range of facial expression the way wolves do. I mean, really, wolves and humans are the two most expressive animals.
Fascinating.
You know, in terms of, so then we observe that the wolves howl to come together. They usually cover a large territory, so they howl to come together. They howl to communicate to neighboring packs, sometimes to avoid a conflict, to determine, you know, here's where we are, there's where you are. If you go east and we go west, we won't run into each other, we won't have a fight. They howl to excite, rally each other before a hunt. So they howl and they get excited. It's almost like a native tribe would dance around the fire before going to war or going to hunting. Yeah. It's like getting their juices up. They howl to celebrate a hunt or a meal after, and they hunt. I mean, the most beautiful purpose of the howl that I've witnessed is mood synchronization. They synchronize the state of mind and the emotional state by howling together. So they're also able to prevent fights if they get too excited and start having confrontations between pack members. A howl will calm them down and bring them down to peace.
Fascinating. And you mentioned that your first little wolf howled when you were asleep, you said it cracked your heart open.
Yeah. I mean, we have that experience with groups that come all the time at the ranch at one point or another, and we sit around the fire. We do some music sometimes or a meditation, and then the pack starts howling in the middle of that. They really connect to when humans come down and we really slow down and we get connected and present. Wolves immediately sense it and they start howling, and that sound is a sound that has been captivating us for thousands and thousands of years. We've been paying attention to that sound. I mean, you know, the tribes for the Pacific Northwest, they say the wolf taught us how to sing. Uh-huh. You know, and we can take it symbolically, but we can also say maybe we learn how to sing and how to vocalize by trying to imitate wolf sounds, 100,000 years ago. Who knows?
Wow. No, yeah. Okay, where are we on the 12 wolf principles?
Well, we just did the first ones. I'm going to walk into the other ones.
Okay.
So the second one is a complementary to the first. In order to be okay with who they are, wolves know who they are, which is also easier said than done, right? I mean, for us, knowing who we are many times is a combination of what we've been told, what's been projected on us, you know, a bunch of programs. There's a knowing that wolves and nature have in general that it's a lot less confusing than what we have created for ourselves. The third one, it says that wolves let go of the past to make room for new things in their lives. Wolves use experiences as a reference. They remember, you know, there's a hole here, it's a precipice, so don't go that way. But the precipice doesn't create an emotional restriction, right?
Okay.
They have this reference point. And they have this way to, many mammals have the way to shake off tension and trauma out of their system. So,
yeah.
So what we call here somatic, healing or movement practice or some of the healing that we can achieve through yoga or through Tai Chi, Qigong, the movements that Carlos Castaneda have passed on as well, tensegrity movements, magical passes. That's a practical tool to release tension and trauma out of the body. So letting go of the past, I mean, if your emotional body is filled to the brim with restriction and pain, there's really not much room for new experiences. Mm-hmm. I mean, every single experience gets filtered through that past traumatic, So this principle is about sooner or later, we need to be able to shake it off our systems and give life another chance. The fourth one, on the heels of the letting go of the past, walls are open to learn new things. So walls are constantly explored. Hold on. Yes. Sorry, there's somebody asking me for the room in a minute. So the walls are open to learn new things. They're a constant state of exploration. When wolves are hiking, they're constantly, even if they're hiking, we take them hiking in the same area, they're constantly exploring. Even if it's the same area over and over, they're constantly, so they don't take any space or any experience for granted. The five is wolves give 150% to everything they do. What I mean by that is that many times when we think we give 100, it's not 100. We give up sooner than we should. So if you go just a little bit more, you'll find another gear that will really take you to the next level. So I don't know if we have the time. I mean, this is number five. We have seven more to go. Or we can let the readers, you know, get intrigued and then go for it.
Yeah. Sure. There's pressure for you to free up the room, and we are getting far along in terms of time. So I wonder if there's more that you would like to say to feel that.
I love this interview. I love where you took it. I mean, what I like to say is that Wolf Connection is a nonprofit organization. It exists thanks to the good hearts and willingness of community members that get involved, that volunteer, that donate, that help us care for the wolves. So if it is a plea that I can make to your listeners, is to go to our website, wolfconnection.org, get involved. If they see what they like, book a visit, come talk to us and see ways they can support the project.
Well, you might see me at some
please.
Point. So
I would love to welcome you.
Please remember this contact.
I will.
Yeah. I really appreciate everything that you've shared with us here. And Teo Alfaro, I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate it.
Next time, bring a wolf.
I will.
Okay. Bye-bye. What a remarkable person Teo Alfaro is. He's a heart-centered man who has dedicated his life to serving others and to serving the planet. Growing up in Argentina, he recalls that his mother would sometimes take him to a brujo curandero, witch doctor, when he was sick. Perhaps this was the earliest seed that put him on the shamanic path. Later, on a mountain climbing trip with his best friend, he had a near-death experience. This was perhaps a second seed, sensitizing him to the brevity of life and the need for a life of purpose. Later, near the end of his second year of compulsory military service, he had a kind of spontaneous peak experience of ego loss and a unitary consciousness with all of nature. This transcendent experience can be seen as what Joseph Campbell termed the call. Because Argentina was experiencing a failing economy and hyperinflation in the wake of the Falklands War, he left for America in his early 20s, where he was to discover the books of Carlos Castaneda. These inspired him so powerfully that he set out to find the reclusive Castaneda to get training to become a shaman himself. He finally got to where Castaneda had been living, only to discover that Castaneda had died a year earlier. As fate would have it, he met two of Castaneda's advanced students slash collaborators who took him under their wings for the shamanic training he craved. In my interview with him, he confessed to probably being more deeply into the Castaneda style quest than anyone else. It becomes very clear that Teo Alfaro throws himself all in to whatever he undertakes. Fate reveals more of his destiny when he is adopted by a wolf dog puppy, which leads him to accepting responsibility for a whole pack of wolves and wolf dogs. It's not long before he founds the nonprofit Wolf Connection Sanctuary in the mountains near Malibu, California, and becomes the creator of Wolf Therapy, a singular program that empowers individuals dealing with psychological and emotional pain, addiction, and trauma using the human-wolf bond. His book, The Wolf Connection, is a delightful read, taking one through the science of wolves, the history of their relations with humans, the mythology surrounding them, inspiring stories of wolf-human connection. This book will fit well on the shelves of therapists and also will make a wonderful gift for all sorts of readers, young and old. And be sure to experience the remarkable Teo Alfaro on his several TEDx presentations. The title of the book, once again, is The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human, by Teo Alfaro.
Dr. Dave, I'm continuously inspired and educated by your podcast. You interview such a wide variety of sophisticated and intelligent guests in such a graceful, well-orchestrated, and easy-to-listen-to way. I learn so much from listening while I make art and organize my life. I want to make sure this podcast keeps up and running and will be supporting more as I am able to in the future. I'm currently just finishing up my master's degree at Southwestern College in Santa Fe, New Mexico, studying art therapy and counseling. Just want to say thanks for the many gifts your work offers others and much appreciation. And I hope to, donate more in the future, and I encourage others to do the same. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Santa Fe art therapist, for your help and for encouraging others to follow your fine example. And thanks to those of you who do make regular financial contributions. Others can see your names listed if they go to the honor roll on our site. If they do so, they'll see that it's a relatively small number of generous souls. Won't you please join this small and prestigious club? You know, last week I said I would probably take a week off this week, but couldn't do it. I'm really happy to bring you this week's interview. I found the interview with Teo Alfaro lifting. By the way, I do want to let you know that we have a new transcript on the site, thanks to longtime listener Heather McCartney. It's episode number 647, The Unspeakable Mind of PTSD, with Shelley Jane, MD. Thanks so much, Heather, for this valuable contribution. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up for today. Thanks to today's guest, Teo Alfaro, for sharing so delightfully and richly about the age-old bond between humans and wolves and the wolf therapy that he's developed. My guest next week will be longtime listener and author Gary Gatch, speaking about his latest book, Pause, Breathe, Smile, Awakening Mindfulness When Buddhism Is Not Enough. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
You've been shrink wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.